अवेलेबल है.
Radio Buddhist Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You listen to the sound of universal compassion. Today is 30 of July. We will continue listening to Tenzin's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Davis. And please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello and welcome once more to Dharma Radio. We're in the middle of a big fight on this program, but I promise I'm not having a shouting match with the wonderful people who constantly work miracles here in the studio. The fight is between the mind seeking for enlightenment and the mental factor of anger, which tries its best to stop us from attaining that enlightenment. As we saw in the last program, our most ferocious enemy in the quest for enlightenment is this anger, which clouds our judgment, causes immediate harm to ourselves and others, and leads us to claustrophobic, heated, and hellish situations in the future. No ordinary enemy can do as much harm as anger. An ordinary enemy can only harm us for a limited amount of time. But anger is like a roundworm that, once having burrowed into us, goes wherever we go, constantly causing damage. Of course, ordinary enemies harm us. That is why they're called enemies, says His Holiness the Dalai Lama. But the wrong they do us is intended to help themselves or their friends, not just to make us unhappy. On the other hand, the inner enemy, anger, has no other function than to destroy our positive actions and make us suffer. From the moment it appears, it exists for the sole purpose of harming us. So we should confront it with all the means we have. Now, I hope all this fighting talk hasn't put you off the program, but has made you even more determined to engage with and defeat our common enemy, anger. But anyway, before we go further swinging our mental swords, let's take a moment to examine our motivation and make sure we are participating in the program for all the right reasons. As we've said before, motivating for only this life's happiness is actually not all that skillful. This life is quickly over, and then any benefit from the action is gone. Motivating for the happiness of future lives is better, but the best is the motivation to gain enlightenment so that we can help others also become enlightened. As you know, the Buddha wasn't some god. He was an ordinary person just like ourselves, who realized that all our suffering comes from our own mental fabrications and emotional reactions, and so went about purifying his mind and eventually reached the highest evolved state. This means we can do the same. We only have to apply effort and determination with the right motivation, and eventually we will get there. So let's set the motivation to do that now before we talk some more about how to apply effort with our determination. Thank you. Now let's gird our loins and re-enter the battle against anger. We are using Shanti Deva as a guide to the Bodhisattva's way of life as a manual, and I'm going through it in accordance with the teachings I've had, His Holiness the Dalai Lama's books Healing Anger and The Flash of Lightning in the Dark of Night, and Pema Chodron's commentary No Time to Lose. We've gone through the first 8 verses of the 135 verses in this chapter on patience. And in the last program, in verse 7, we saw how the mind of discontent, which comes from not getting what we want and getting what we don't want, is the fuel for anger. Having found its fuel of mental unhappiness in the prevention of what I wish for and in the doing of what I do not want, hatred increases and then destroys me, says Shantideva. When we are frustrated in our desires, or when we feel threatened by someone or something, our minds become dissatisfied and unhappy. But instead of realizing how that mind makes us miserable and so letting it go, we hold on to it, going over and over the situation again and again. We get more and more irritated until eventually we explode in a burst of anger. It's like the little boy in a department store who nags and nags at his mother to get him a toy. She keeps on refusing, but the boy continues to whine and nag more and more desperately. Then, when the mother says they're going home, the child bursts into a temper tantrum that threatens to bring the whole shop down around their ears. Our dissatisfied mind is just like that. Shantideva says that realizing this, he will not allow that discontent to take over his mind. He will instead starve his enemy anger of this sustenance and keep his mind happy. And how is he going to do this? He reasons with himself, saying that it is unreasonable to allow the unhappy mind to arise. He says, "Whatever befalls me, I shall not disturb my mental joy. For having been made unhappy, I shall not accomplish what I wish, and my virtues will decline." Here, cheerful happiness of mind doesn't mean Ren and Stimpy's all over the place kind of happy, happy, joy, joy. But it's a calm, stable mind, the opposite of discontent. It is this mind that is the basis for all our practice and keeps us on track as we make our way to enlightenment. As Shantideva says, being miserable doesn't bring us anything but suffering. We certainly don't get what we want when we give in to depression. And in fact, all being miserable does is lead to anger and hatred, which damages the positive potential we may have accumulated before. That's the thing with anger. It has this capacity to destroy the positive potential or positive imprints we've gathered from practicing patience, tolerance and generosity in previous times. And it makes others unhappy as well. So if we can starve anger of the discontented mind so that it's not able to arise, we'll be in a much better position. Pema Chodron says that Shantideva's mental joy is a feeling that our life and mind are workable if we reject our storylines and live in the present, no matter how uncomfortable that may be. A good description of patience, she says, is learning to relax with the edginess of our energy. And His Holiness says the same thing. In a flash of lightning in the dark of night, he writes, "We must make an effort to remain in a relaxed state of mind, because unless we get rid of this unsettled feeling, it will feed our hatred, causing it to grow and eventually destroy us." Then in the next verse, Shantideva points out why it is unreasonable to get discontented or angry. This is quite an ingenious argument, and it's worthwhile memorizing this verse well for when we get anxious or upset. It goes, "Why be unhappy about something if it can be remedied? And what is the use of being unhappy about something if it cannot be remedied?" Now let's look at an example. Say you take the bus into work every day. One day, you have to meet an early deadline for some important work, and you arrive at the bus stop with plenty of time, but the bus doesn't turn up. If there aren't any taxi ranks in the vicinity, you appear to be stuck, and it seems your deadline is not going to be met. You can sit there waiting for the next bus, getting more and more miserable. And when that bus comes, you get on thoroughly upset and are maybe unpleasant to the bus driver and other passengers. Shantideva points out that actually the miserable state of mind doesn't help the situation at all. If you can't get to work on time, well, there's nothing to do about it. Just accept the situation and keep a calm mind. At least that way you suffer a lot less, and so do the bus driver and the other passengers. However, if someone waiting at the bus stop with you has a cell phone, you could ask them to phone a taxi for you or contact your boss to say you are stranded. Of course, you could continue to curse the bus company and all that work on it, but that only makes you miserable and doesn't change the situation at all. With a calm, untroubled mind, the situation is much less of a difficulty than if the mind is in an upheaval. So Shantideva says, when you meet up with a problem, if it can be fixed, don't worry, just fix it. Well, if it can't be fixed, don't worry, just accept it. And with that attitude, what can really go wrong? Then in the following verses, Shantideva determines what causes anger and shows us both how our usual attitude is mistaken and how to change it. Verse 11 says, "For myself and for my friends, I want no suffering, no disrespect, no harsh words, and nothing unpleasant. But for my enemies, it is the opposite." The objects which he mentions here are related to what we call the eight worldly dharmas. We can remember these in a little rhyme that goes, gain and loss, pleasure and pain, fame and disgrace, praise and blame. These are the things that from a worldly point of view give us happiness. When we gain something, say we win a bit of money on lotto, our minds get hugely excited and happy. But when we lose something, we get depressed and miserable. Similarly, we experience so much happiness when we get some pleasure. But when we experience a painful situation, like a relationship breakdown, we feel as though the whole world has come to an end. In the same way, we want people to think well of us. We want to be famous and loved. But when people despise us or look down on us, we get very depressed and sorry for ourselves. Finally, when people praise us, we feel very happy and uplifted. But if we meet up with any criticism, we feel like committing suicide. These types of reactions are characteristic of people not on the spiritual path. If the eight worldly dharmas matter to us, we are not facing in the direction of the enlightened state. To attain enlightenment, these things must not matter to us at all. The mind has to stay calm and unruffled, whether we get some material advantage or lose something, whether we experience some pleasure or land up in some unpleasant, painful situation, whether we become famous or disgraced, and whether people say how wonderful we are or cast us as the worst of the worst. It should not matter to us a bit. A story from Tibet tells of a great monk and teacher who was very popular with his many disciples. One woman who admired him very much tried to get him to give up being a monk and marry her, or at least sleep with her. But he gently refused and continued doing what he was doing. The woman became very upset. About that time, she had a baby to another man, and one day, while the monk was teaching, marched up to him, dumped the baby in the monk's lap, and said, "Here, this is yours," implying that he was the father. Now, of course, monks are supposed to be celibate, so it would have been very disgraceful if what the woman was accusing him of were true. Some of his followers believed that he had misbehaved and gave him up as their teacher in disgust. However, the monk calmly continued teaching and took the baby home, where he looked after it as well as he could. A few days later, the mother became remorseful about what she had done, so went to the monk, apologized, and asked for her child back. The monk quite calmly gave the baby back to the mother and continued his life as a monk and a teacher. Now, this is not the normal way people would behave, as Shantideva points out. Usually, when we or our loved ones undergo difficulties like pain, humiliation, insult, or rebukes, we get very upset and maybe decide to take revenge on those who inflict the misery on us. But when our enemies or the people we don't like suffer difficulties, we rejoice and are very happy. His Holiness says that these are our natural reactions to situations, but actually it is due to these natural tendencies that we develop that discontented mind we have identified as the fuel of anger. We have to re-examine our attitudes and our approach to what we think makes us suffer. We must understand the first noble truth, that all our existence is in the nature of suffering, His Holiness says. When we have a grip on this, then we can set out to see if we can actually escape the suffering, and this is crucial. Only by realizing the suffering nature of our existence will we develop the impetus to see if we can be free of it. When we see, as the Buddha did, that we can, we will be able to do whatever needs to be done to liberate ourselves. Shantideva goes on to show us how to change our attitude to suffering so that it will be much less distressing to us. In the following verses, he talks about developing patience in the face of suffering. Patience when we think about the Dharma, and patience when we are faced with harmful situations like the monk was. In verse 12, he talks about the patience in the face of suffering. He says, "The causes of happiness sometimes occur, but the causes for suffering are very many. Without suffering, there's no renunciation. Therefore, mind, you should stand firm." Many people approach life with a kind of "I'm okay, Jack" attitude that glosses over the continual discomforts we experience in this life. As long as they are not in any serious suffering, they think life is fine. However, when we take a closer look at our existence, we see that we are very rarely comfortable. Even sitting down, we're forced to move after a while because the position we're in becomes uncomfortable. Compared to the causes and conditions which bring us these and more serious discomforts, the causes of happiness are few, and we have to suffer whether we like it or not. But the intensity of our suffering depends on our attitude more than what is happening to us. If we develop a positive mental attitude and high tolerance for discomfort, we will, of course, experience less of a problem when suffering arises. His Holiness uses the example of people brought up in very privileged families who, when they meet difficulties, find it very difficult to cope because they're so used to everything being smooth for them. In contrast, we can think of some of the Tibetan nomads who live very hard lives but remain quite cheerful through it all. Then the last two lines of the verse indicate that unless we think about the suffering nature of this kind of existence, we will not develop the renunciation, which will be our motivating factor to get out of it. They read, "Without suffering, there's no renunciation. Therefore, mind, you should stand firm." His Holiness puts it this way. These two lines tell us that not only is it important to reflect upon suffering, but there is great benefit in doing so as well. Reflecting on suffering has a tremendous significance because only through recognizing the nature of suffering is it possible to generate a genuine sense of renunciation, a genuine desire to seek freedom from this bondage. Now, as long as we are caught in the cycle of lives through our karma and afflictive emotions, we will never be free from dissatisfaction and misery. Every time we come across suffering, it can be a strong reminder of what it is really like living in this cyclic existence, and so be a spur for us to stop hanging around, but to do something to get out of it. We can meditate on suffering, but it is really our own experience of suffering that brings the painful nature of this type of existence home to us. By this, I don't mean that just experiencing a car accident, relationship breakup, or some such unpleasantness will bring us a realization of renunciation. We've all gone through plenty of those. We might get some temporary renunciation from that, but as soon as things get better again, we tend to think life isn't so bad after all, and we're caught again. To get real renunciation, so that it's as if we were always living in the middle of a fire, we need to see how unsatisfactory this whole existence is, that we can't go anywhere in it and find long-term peace and joy. The very nature of this existence, its very fabric, is in the nature of suffering and dissatisfaction. This is what we have to realize before real renunciation will occur. Especially for angry people, the causes of suffering are everywhere, Pema Chodron points out. Relating to others, they're very easily provoked, and the older they become, the worse they get. More and more situations cause them discomfort. If we think of ourselves 10 years from now, do we want to find we have more causes for happiness and fewer for suffering? And His Holiness says that having a body inevitably involves suffering. Sufferings are numerous, he says, and their causes abundant. A wise person can achieve happiness by transforming suffering as a means to progress. It is only natural that we dislike suffering. But if we can develop the willpower to bear difficulties, then we will grow more and more tolerant. And, as if agreeing, Shantideva continues by chiding himself saying how some people are able to endure lots of suffering for very little purpose, while he is frightened to endure something that has ultimate meaning. He writes, "If some ascetics and the people of Kanapa endure the pain of cuts and burns for no reason, then for the sake of liberation, why have I no courage?" The Kanapa folk he talks about are Hindus, particularly devoted to a goddess called Durga, who practiced severe austerities like being cut and burned. From a Buddhist point of view, Durga is not an enlightened being, so cannot free beings from samsara, like the omniscient Buddha can through his teachings. Now that is why Shantideva says such austerities are meaningless. But we don't need to go to other cultures to know that many people go through all sorts of hardships to achieve goals that are essentially meaningless. In the worship of their bodies or of the mighty dollar, people in the Western culture go to extraordinary lengths. We only have to think of sports people who train hard for hours every day for years trying to become champions. And for what benefit? Maybe they do become a champion in a sport, but for how long do they stay at the top? A year or two, or even a month or two, and then it's all over when someone younger, faster, and fitter comes along and all that hard work has basically gone up in sweat. All that remains is a fading name. The body just gets old and unserviceable. And all our worldly aims are the same. None of them leads to the perfect happiness we really want to achieve, just to short-term unsatisfactory pleasures that make us long for more. Shantideva says, if people can endure so much hardship for so little gain, why are we so backward about going through hardship for a really beneficial goal like the enlightenment that frees us forever from all suffering? There is nothing whatsoever that is not made easier through acquaintance. So through becoming acquainted with small harms, I should learn to patiently accept greater harms, he says. And here he points out that whatever we try, if we keep up with our practice, in the end through familiarity, it will become easy. If we practice anger again and again, in the end, it will take a very minor thing to upset us and send us into a rage. But if we practice patience again and again, in due course, we will be able to endure huge troubles with a calm mind. You might think, no, that's too difficult. But as Shantideva says, if we're clever, nothing is too difficult. Clever here doesn't mean smart and intelligent, like Albert Einstein. It means being skillful in how we do things. It is obvious we will have a lot of difficulty being kind and peaceful with somebody who is beating us up. So Shantideva says, don't worry about trying to be a Buddha. Just start training yourself by practicing in small, irritating situations. The motorway is a good place to practice. As you probably know, it can be a highway to a lot of stress, no matter where you're going. People cut in front of you, change lanes without looking properly, and do all sorts of strange things. In Auckland, you can't seem to go anywhere without having to slow down to a snail's pace or take a wide detour for roadworks. Now, none of these things are in themselves of major importance. But if we get impatient, they can be. I guess impatience and speed must be a couple of major factors in accidents on the motorway. Anyway, instead of getting all uptight and stressed out, we can try actually keeping our eyes and ears open for ways to help other motorists. When someone cuts in front of us, instead of getting all indignant and swearing, think, perhaps that person is very late for an appointment, or maybe their boss is really angry with them. And then silently in our mind, we can wish them well. It can be amazing what difference it makes to one's experience of a potentially frustrating journey. I've found that when I'm in a hurry traveling in a car, one of the best things to do is let someone trying to join the stream of traffic from a side road in. It has a surprisingly calming effect on the mind. So if we practice in these relatively minor situations, it will help us to develop the presence and calmness of mind we need when more serious problems come along. As you will know, we have plenty of small irritants every day to practice on, so it's not as though we can excuse ourselves. After all, We are often patient with some piddling discontents already anyway. As Shantideva says, who has not seen this to be so with trifling sufferings, such as the bites of snakes and insects, feelings of hunger and thirst, and with such minor things as rashes? I should not be impatient with heat and cold, wind and rain, sickness, bondage and beatings, for if I am, the harm they cause me will increase. Oh, which of us has never put up with a mosquito bite or some such small irritation, or going hungry or thirsty for a short while? We all have to experience such things at some time, but whether they are just minor and we brush them off without much worry, or whether they become monstrous, depends not on the mosquito, the hunger or the thirst, but on how we approach them in our mind. If we make a big deal out of them, of course they're going to cause us a lot of grief. But if we take them on with a calm mind and see them just as passing discomforts, nothing to be perturbed about, they hardly concern us at all. I have a good example of this. I don't like camping much. When I was young at university, I used to go camping on the beach quite often, but it always seemed to rain in the middle of the night. Perhaps I just clearly remember the times it did and forgot the nights that were clear. Anyway, now I don't have much of a desire to go out and prove I'm Barry Crump in the bush. Of course, as a monk, I must be ready to endure the weather whatever it is, but a love of roughing it for the sake of the great outdoors just doesn't appeal much. However, one of the people who I lived with at a center in Auckland was just the opposite. She liked camping and tramping even if the weather was playing up a bit. I remember she and her friends were unfazed by nasty weather over an Anzac weekend some years ago, and they wandered off to find somewhere with lots of bush where they could sleep under canvas and commune with the damp possums. Which just goes to show that a situation is fun or not, depending on our mental attitude. For me, rain and cold are a problem. For my flatmate, they're an adventure. Now, who's going to be happier if we ever get caught out in the middle of the night with a broken-down car in the middle of nowhere? Obviously, if I don't practice to accept the wind, rain, and dark with an easy mind, I'll be very unhappy, and my flatmate would not have been bothered at all. We often make things much worse than they really are by worrying needlessly about them. As Shantideva tells us, if we fret about heat, cold, sickness, and so on, it just makes such things seem more and more horrible. And our mind gets more and more upset, losing any calm it may have had. So often I have found that for all my worrying about things, they usually turn out to be a lot less stressful than my overheated imagination made them out to be. So that discontented, worrying mind, which is fertile ground for a burst of anger, is no help to me whatsoever. Anyway, time is now up, and I thank you for being with us today. I hope you can join us again next week. But before we go, please take a minute to dedicate any positive energy we've developed through this program to freeing ourselves from all suffering and gaining enlightenment to be able to help others do the same. Thank you, and until next week, goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful. Beneficial. Empowering.